both unitive and procreative. So we don't get to make up what our purposes are. They already exist. We're givens. We've been created. Now, the other point of view says, actually, we don't have any inbuilt purposes. We get to make them up. And in fact, there's in the 20th century, John Dewey said, man's nature is to have no nature. So if this is true, there could be nothing wrong with sodomy or homosexual marriage. However, if the first view of reality is true, that we do have inbuilt purposes, then both sodomy and homosexual marriage would be profoundly wrong and disordered. So what my book does is lay out from a purely, from the pure perspective of reason, mm-hmm. what is wrong with the endorsement and rationalization of homosexual behavior, and what's wrong with making it the basis for marriage. And it is, I think, a very compelling argument. It's not a new argument, after all, in Western civilization. Until 10 years ago in the Netherlands, no one would have suggested the existence of such a thing as homosexual marriage for a very good reason.
So let me just clarify that the approach that you're taking with your book is not trying to justify or influence the Judeo-Christian viewpoint of homosexuality. You are looking at it, like you said, trying to take a common sense approach and look at it in a rational sense, correct?
More or less correct. I don't use religion or biblical citations for the simple reason that religion has been driven out of the public square. So as soon as a Christian cites the Bible against this behavior, he'll just be patted on the shoulder and said, that's very nice. That's your private religion. Go home and practice it. But
right.
leave the rest of us alone because we're not Christians.
So okay.
By putting forth the rational argument on this, it can't be dismissed on those grounds.
All right, so you are making the point, and correct me, and this is the reason that we're talking about this, that the homosexual behavior is detrimental to our society, not just to American society, but to society as a whole, correct?
Yes, you know, Aristotle begins the Politics with a man and a woman together in the family. Why does he do that? Because the family is the pre-political institution that allows for the existence of villages and then the city of the political order. So Aristotle says that the principle of the family, what makes it possible, is chastity, because it regulates the exclusive sexual relationship between the husband and the wife. And because the family is of the political order. Now, the significance of this is, Aristotle never contemplated the possibility of a homosexual family because sodomy is in itself an unchaste act under any circumstances. So how could you make an act of unchastity the foundation of a marriage, the principle of which is chastity? So it's a contradiction in terms that violates Aristotle's principle of non-contradiction. And that's why he didn't consider the possibility of any such thing. So that's just a little touch of what's wrong with this.
In the beginning of our conversation, you made it very clear, the argument that there are some in the gay community that will say, now, wait a minute, this is all fine and good, but you have to understand, I was created this way. There are others, and I am of this camp, that say, I'm sorry, this is of your... This is a decision that you have made. This is a choice that you are making. And this is the premise that you're talking about as we began this conversation, that there are those of us, and if I'm understanding you correctly, those of us created with a purpose and a set of us that believe, no, we make it up as we go along, right?
Well, you see, I think we all have disordered passions and disordered appetites. Everyone does. One of those disordered passions could be alcoholism. And maybe there could be a genetic component in your disposition toward this particular disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not. No, nobody really knows. in terms of homosexuality, you may or may not be responsible for this disordered inclination. I know in many cases, these poor guys aren't responsible for the inclination because it's the product of some trauma in their childhood. It could be sexual abuse. It could be a total alienation of their father. So they begin compulsively seeking for affection among other males in an inappropriate way. So the disorders exist in all of us. The point is whether you act on the disordered inclination or not. So we're not talking about the inclination so much as the act of it for which you are responsible. The alcoholic is still responsible if he takes the first drink because he knows what's going to happen. And so a homosexual is still morally responsible for that act of sodomy because he doesn't necessarily need to agree to it. If we're saying that he has to agree to it, that he has no free will, well, then that means he's not a moral creature, and it means really condescending to homosexuals and considering them less than fully human. So it's actually that view that you enunciated that some people deploy is a denigration of homosexuals that sort of robs them of their moral dignity.
And not to oversimplify, but you use an example of an alcoholic, an individual that has a proclivity for alcoholism. They have a choice. They can have a diet soda or they can have a scotch and soda. An individual that may have a weight problem, they can choose to have a salad or the bacon cheeseburger.
And the point about this, Seth, is that I've known a number of alcoholics in my life. And a number of them have recovered through their membership in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
They're not outed. They don't announce, I'm an alcoholic and I'm proud of it. They seek help to control that disposition and discipline themselves through AA, a number of them very successfully, and they lead sober lives.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no such thing as Alcoholic Pride Day or...
I'm not sure. Have you been up here for St. Patrick's Day? Because I may I may have to argue
now,
with
that,
you.
Now that hurt. I'm Irish, and you got me on that one. You got me on that one.
I may have to argue with you on that. But all right. So this brings
up... The point is that these disordered inclinations, which we all have to some degree and in some way or another, you don't celebrate that disordered inclination as an order. You don't say, well, that's me, and that's who I am, and you must embrace the acts I perform based on my disordered inclination. To demand that of someone is saying, look, I'm rationalizing my own moral misbehavior. I'm saying that bad is good. And I insist that you say the same thing so that I am secure in my rationalization and I won't be threatened by my conscience or by yours. And that's what's happening today, is the universalization of the rationalization for sodomy, to the point that we are expected to accept the sanctification of this act in marriage.
And I think that brings us to this next point. And first of all, we are speaking with Robert Riley about his new book, Making Gay Okay, How Rationalizing Homosexual Behavior is Changing Everything. The example you just gave, that the alcoholic doesn't have Alcoholics Pride Day, there is no organization, there is no group of people that are out and trying to enforce that, you know what, you're an alcoholic and that's okay. We accept you for your alcoholism and everyone around you should accept you as an alcoholic. And if they don't accept you, well, then there's something wrong with them. However, that actually is the movement with homosexual behavior. There is a definitive movement for us to accept it as normal behavior and for us to just go about our normal lives and not miss a beat. Why? Why is that happening?
Well, again, I can turn to Aristotle in the Ethics. He explains the psychology of this operation of rationalization, that human beings are incapable of choosing an act or a thing unless it's presented to oneself as a good. So if I'm going to do something wrong, I must rationalize my behavior and say, well, what I'm doing is right. usually the rebuke of conscience comes in after the act, and one recognizes, I really did something bad there. And you regret it, and you repent, and the moral order is restored. But if you choose to base your life on an evil, say you become a professional thief,
mm-hmm.
or you say, I'm going to base my life on the act of sodomy, then the rationalization you construct has to be more permanent. And in order to be permanent, it has to be accepted not only by you, but by others around you, because they otherwise might rebuke you. They might challenge the rationalization and say, I'm sorry, that's against reality and it's immoral. And that would endanger you. Your conscience then might enter into the situation and rebuke you. So at all costs, you must silence other people and demand that they share in this rationalization. And this is the way the homosexual movement has worked through our culture, its civic institutions, its court system, and now its government. So the government now can coerce people into accepting this rationalization. I should add that the reason they've been able to do this is because they have as allies all the people who, since the 1960s in the sexual revolution, have rationalized their heterosexual misbehavior. So all the people who thought sex outside of marriage, that infidelity, that promiscuity, that pornography, that these were all okay, it's basically the same rationalization. And the psychological dynamo of this works something like this. If you'll rationalize my sexual misbehavior, I'll rationalize your sexual misbehavior. So there's a natural alliance between those who support and engage in heterosexual misbehavior and those who do with homosexual misbehavior.
So forgive me for boiling it down overly simplistic, but what I'm hearing you say is that there is a behavioral pattern of selfishness.
Yeah, it's of course, it is saying I don't have to conform myself to reality, to the purposes for which I'm made. I will conform reality to my desires. And the more power I have to do that, the more conformity to my desires there will be.
All right, what do you see going into our future? You see as being the ramifications of this,
the
societal twist?
Yeah, the point that I just expressed is the destruction of the foundation of society because it denies the common good. We move from the understanding of human nature that we all share, that our souls are all ordered to the same good, to the same form of happiness and a life of virtue, to the reality we get to make up to satisfy our desires, which is individual with each of us, and therefore the basis for community, for the common good, for the common weal, is removed. Now, when that happens, we move from the primacy of reason in human affairs, that is, reason apprehending reality, nature, and finding out how we ought to live according to the way things are, the primacy of reason, which is the foundation of our republican government, based on the laws of nature and of nature's God, to the primacy of will and the primacy of force. Because what we'll see happen is, as Socrates predicted, the view will become that right is the rule of the stronger, and the strongest get to satisfy their passions first and at the expense of others. So that's what's coming. Once you deny the laws of nature and of nature's God,
mm-hmm.
get ready, because the logical outcome of the alternate view of reality is tyranny.
Now, Mr. Riley, you have published several papers, books on a variety of subjects. The Closing of the Muslim Mind in 2010, the roots of Islamist ideology, in London in 2006, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You have a vast source of research. You have published, And up until now, if I may go back to this Breitbart article that brought you to my attention, up until now, you did not have any problems or, well, not anything significant about having the, at least the conservative media, at least giving you a voice and hearing what you're saying. The article that I read said that the conservative media are ignoring you on this book. Do you see that as happening? And if so, what? Why? Why is it that this subject is causing you to be persona non grata?
They're scared.
Scared of what?
One person said this issue is a career killer. Anyone who gets associated with it will be removed. Now, there are other points of view. In some cases, these so-called conservative publications have bought the rationalization themselves, and they've been infiltrated by it. Or they've been mau-mau'd, they're scared, or they're simply saying, look, we've lost on this issue. We don't want to be associated with a losing issue, so we're going to ignore it.
Mm.
And that's what's going on. But I'd say the principal thing is fear. Fear of what they call the gay mafia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in touch with one writer whose name I won't use. Extremely courageous man who was raised by two lesbians. And I wanted to send him the book, and he was reluctant to give his address because of the number of death threats he has had.
Oh, good grief.
So when we say enforcing the rationalization, it can go that far, just as a gunman showed up at the Family Research Council a couple years ago intending to murder the people inside. That's an extreme, of course, but I, for instance, you can go to Breitbart and read Austin Roos's article. There are some 1,300 comments on it, and you can get some character of the hysteria with which people respond to this issue. You see, if their rationalization is threatened, they become hysterical because they don't want to face the guilt that they otherwise would experience if their rationalization crumbles. So they get very passionate. They accuse people like me of being haters, because they have surrendered to passion.
Well, and
they can't imagine, any opposition to their passion except coming from another passion, which they then say is hatred. They don't understand. No, the opposition to the behavior you're endorsing comes from reason.
One of the things that absolutely annoys me to my very core is hypocrisy. When an individual will shout at the top of their lungs, you have to accept me for who I am, I'm normal, I'm okay, I'm right, then when I express my viewpoints, I am denigrated, I am shunned, ridiculed, and called all manner of names, and like you said, my physical well-being could be threatened. To me, that is hypocrisy. If I am supposed to accept you as you are, then you should also show me the same respect and accept me for how I am. We can agree to disagree, but there has to be mutual respect. I don't see that.
No, but there you are. You're expecting reasonable behavior, and this isn't about reason. It's about passions.
Mm-hmm.
I came across this wonderful remark by George Orwell the other day. He said, quote, "The more a society drifts from truth, the more it will hate those who speak it."
Mm-hmm.
Unquote. So that's the price people have to pay if they insist on telling the truth today.
Mr. Rudd, do
we have another moment?
Sure, please do.
Yeah, I would say, here's the interesting thing about the denial in which these people live in their rationalization. I had an online debate with a homosexual a couple of weeks ago, and when I was talking about the inherent purposes in our nature, I said, for instance, our eye. Certainly you agree our eye is, the purpose of our eye is to see, or our ear to hear. And he said, no, our eye doesn't have the purpose of seeing. It just happens to see. It happens accidentally that we see. You can't say that the organ of the eye is an organ of sight. And I said, well, good luck when you go to your ophthalmologist. Be sure to tell him that your eye is not an organ of sight. He'll probably tell you to go home then, since logically he wouldn't be able to repair your eye if it didn't have the purpose of seeing. Now, I knew why he did that. He had to say things have no purposes because he knew the next step would mm-hmm. be my saying, by the way, your sexual organs also have inbuilt purposes, which are unitive and procreative.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use your sexual powers outside of those inbuilt purposes, you are misusing them, just as you would if you used your ear to store pencils or something. And in fact, you most likely will harm that organ if you don't use it for its intended purpose. And this, by the way, I'd like to say, you know, I don't have any objection with two men loving each other or two women loving each other. It can be quite a beautiful thing. The only problem is if they sexualize that love. And when you sexualize love between two people of the same gender, you find out that the act can neither be unitive, because it's physically impossible, nor can it be procreative, because if it can't be unitive, it can't be procreative either. Way of letting you know that the nature of your love for that person is not spousal,
mm-hmm.
and therefore you shouldn't sexualize it. That's where it goes wrong at that point.
Mr. Riley, this is a subject that obviously is very, very hot with passion on both sides. There is a lot of rationalization on both sides. There's a lot of misinformation on both sides. One of the things that I again gets under my skin is when you said earlier that you're called a hater or you know a homophobe, etc. All these labels that are thrown at us. You and I share the same viewpoint of, listen, if to a certain extent, what you do in the privacy of your home is your business. I disagree with that behavior. I do not feel that it's right. But I am not calling for your dismissal. I am not calling for you to be stoned. I am not calling for any of these types of behaviors. I am not hating. I simply disagree with your rationalization. And I have not taken it to the extent that you have, done the research and written the book and so forth, but I have my personal opinion. This is something that is absolutely frustrating, is the hypocrisy, not showing the equal respect, and the name calling, just the elementary aspect of name calling. It seems to me that you have hit the nail on the head, that there is not the attempt to bring into equal status. There is the intent to make it normal and accepted.
They're not seeking the truth. This is not a conversation they undertake to seek the truth. It's a conversation they undertake to enforce the rationalization, which is essential for the continuance of their preferred behavior. That's what's going on.
Mr. Riley, how do we get a hold of your book so that those that are listening right now, how do they get your book, do some reading and learn more on their own and learn more about you and your other writings?
Well, thank you for asking. Making Gay Okay, How Rationalizing Homosexual Behavior is Changing Everything is available on most websites such as Amazon and so forth, easily available there, and it should be in many bookstores because Ignatius Press, which published it, has pretty good distribution. And if you go to Amazon and Google Robert Riley, you will see that and my other books.
Mr. Riley, thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to talk with us. Thank you for being courageous and standing up for what you have feel is right and for writing a book about it. Apparently this is the new frontier, standing up for what is right. And I applaud you, and I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate yours.
Have a good rest of your day, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks so much.